From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. It's Thursday, the day we read from your letters, and first, a correction. Several listeners to the first feed of our program yesterday heard David Kestenbaum, in his obituary for Edward Teller, say the physicist tried to persuade President Franklin Roosevelt of the necessity of developing a hydrogen bomb. It was, of course, Harry Truman who needed convincing.
The financial vulnerability of middle-class, two-income families is the subject of a book by Elizabeth Warren. During my interview earlier this week with Warren, she described what she calls the two-income trap, a condition where two-earner couples with heavy debt and little savings face financial disaster when one spouse loses a job.
How are these families more vulnerable than single-parent households, writes Pauline Sobelman of Briarcliff Manor, New York. The two-income families may have twice as much of an opportunity to be laid off, but they also have an income cushion if one of the parents is laid off. What cushion does the single parent, mostly women, have?
This has got to be the weakest theory I've heard lately, concludes Wayne Ferris of Wichita Falls, Texas. Making more money creates more financial risk. What it actually boils down to is that in America, we always want more, more, more. The more we make, the more we spend. If we as a country would learn to live within our means, we wouldn't have these silly theories popping up.
My interview with author Linda Perlstein about her year-long experience observing middle school students in Columbia, Maryland, troubled Dr. Milton Deamer of Stowe, Ohio. Perlstein told the story of a young boy who spent much of the school year alone because his father was a truck driver and his mother was out of the picture. As a result, he spent his time watching television instead of studying. Dr. Deamer writes, Ms. Perlstein claimed she could not guide him toward more responsible behavior because she needed to maintain her journalistic distance. He goes on, is it really necessary to watch the passengers drown to identify the problems of a sinking ship? I believe she let her journalistic goals overshadow her humanitarian responsibilities.
After our story on the lawsuits initiated by the recording industry against individuals who've downloaded copyrighted music from the Internet, several people wanted us to know where they think the true problem lies. Among them, Neil Blair of Chicago, who says he's a CD buyer as well as a downloader. He says if the music industry put half the effort they are exerting against music downloaders into finding, developing, and keeping good talent, they wouldn't have to resort to suing their own customers. Mr. Blair goes on, did it ever occur to them that their slumping sales might have something to do with the quality or lacking quality of their product?
Speaking of that product, it doesn't seem that Louise Rovner of Woodland Hills, California, will be downloading any of the songs of John Mayer, whose music we featured earlier this week. She asks, just who is John Mayer related to at ATC or NPR? Really, you gave that much free advertising to a Grammy winner the day before a new release. I mean, the guy is not that talented or innovative.
But our visit with singer Diane Reeves last night, Seth Whitner of Portland, Oregon, has no doubt. She's one of the real ones, he says, who lets herself and the listener experience the heart of a song like very few can. I can't sing to save my life, he says, but I can tell the difference between the way Miss Reeves breathes life into a tune and the by-the-numbers assembly line jobs that all too often make their way onto CDs and the airwaves.
You can sing our praises or send your complaints. Email us at atc@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.